Well, the racing sailboats are back in town this year for the start of the 2018 international race between Grand Marais and Thunder Bay, presented by the Thunder Bay Yacht Club and established in 1963. The Lake Superior International Yacht Race is one of the oldest annual sailing races on the Big Lake, and start time for the race is 11 a.m. tomorrow morning, the starting line right out front of the lighthouse. Bob Vanderplug, Fleet Captain of the Thunder Bay Yacht Club, joins us now to tell us more about the international and yacht racing on Lake Superior. Welcome back to the Roadhouse, Bob.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave.
Well, I look forward to this every year, as well as the fleet coming down. And give us a little history of this race and the various starting ports you've used over the years.
Well, the very first, I was just looking at the trophy today at our clubhouse, and the very first year the race was run was in 63, but the trophy was first awarded in 1968 according to the trophy itself. So, you know, that's a long time ago and the history's a little murky, but a fellow named W. Tamblyn was the first winner of that trophy, the Lake Superior Trophy. And, you know, the race has run every year since then. And I think the great thing about it is it's an international race because it has to cross the border. So sometimes we cross it from the United States into Canada, and sometimes we cross it from Canada back into the United States. But I think the theme of it all is that it's always going to cross the border, and that's a nice thing. And it's always a mixed participation with boats and crew and skippers from both sides of the border participating and sharing a sport they love.
Well, and let's get into this sport of yacht racing. And why is it so adored? What makes it so fun and rewarding for you guys out there and gals?
I think, it's everybody has some, I think it's a little bit different for everybody. But I think the thing that's shared is just a unique way to experience nature. Maybe it's like flying a glider aircraft. I don't know because I've never done that. But, I mean, when you turn the motor off, and you feel the boat under power from the wind and the sails, and under control from the rudder and the way the sails are trimmed and so on. It's just a feeling like taking off. I mean, there's that aha moment that people who are new to sailing experience when we take them out and get the sails up, and then we turn the motor off, and the boat keeps moving. It doesn't slow down, and that's the moment that people say, "Oh, yeah, this is. I get this now." And you can talk in a normal conversation. You know, there's no motor noise or anything like that. That's part of it. There's a lot of other things. I mean, there's just the experience of being on the water. There's the idea of challenging nature to a certain extent. There's the competitive aspect that you're racing against other sailors. Everybody's trying to make their boat go as fast as they can. And there's a camaraderie of just shared experience at the end of the race when we get together and talk about, you know, what we could have done and what we should have done if we weren't successful. And if we were successful, we smile and nod. And it's just so many things to enjoy. It's a truly, I could never be bored sailing.
Well, it's a silent sport with the rush of wind and waves. And I always find it fun that, you know, you might only be going 8-10 miles per hour, but it sure feels a lot faster than that as you're rushing across the surface. Is there, you know, what's the fear factor too when these boats get tipped over a little bit? That's natural, right? But it only adds to the thrill.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's something that, you know, people who haven't much experience or who are new to the sport often ask about. There's two things that, you know, that I think they would find reassuring and that, you know, would explain it to lay people. One is that the more the boat tips over, the less pressure that the wind exerts on the sails, just because they're not presenting as much surface area because they're slanted over. And then the other thing is that underneath the boat, in keel boats anyway, there's a big heavy lead fin that acts as a counterbalance to whatever pressure the wind is putting on the sail. So on my boat, for instance, the boat weighs about 11,000 pounds, but about 5,000 pounds of that weight is in the keel. So it goes to 7 feet below the water line. So, you know, there's that natural righting thing that's happening because of the keel, and people don't see it because it's under the water, but it makes a big difference.
Well, and you got to put a lot of trust in all of that engineering and science, but it sure works, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. And then the other thing is, you know, when you've probably seen it yourself. I mean, when the wind's blowing stronger, we get all the crew, you know, lined up sitting on the rail. And if you think of a crew of 10 people, which is how many we've got on the boat for this year's race, averaging in, say, around 200 pounds, you know, with their gear and their boots and stuff, life jackets and stuff, that's about 2,000 pounds almost of ballast that we can move around the boat and distribute that weight to, you know, in whatever way that makes us sail faster or flatter or more comfortably.
Well, the International was in town last summer, I think a weekend ago, the end of July, and you guys had a spectacular spinnaker start. And if you could just describe for our listeners what that means, what is a spinnaker sail and why was that so beautiful last year?
Well, I mean, the spinnaker is the thing that always catches people's eye because it's the largest sail on a boat, you know, on a 35-foot boat, spinnaker might be 12, 13, 1400 square feet. I mean, it's huge. And they're always very colorful. Like there's no rules about how many colors or how you distribute them. So they're always very eye catching that way. And, you know, starting with a spinnaker means that, the boat's going fast. And it also means that you're going, almost directly to where you want to go. Unlike when you're just sailing with the white sails, sometimes you're tacking or zigzagging back and forth to get where you want to go. And last year's start was amazing. I mean, to have a spinnaker start is very exciting because it's much more, or much less, I should say, predictable than a normal upwind start. And we had just fantastic weather. We sailed that spinnaker for almost 12 hours after the start last year.
Yeah, it was a great race and a great spectator start as, you know, folks can get right out on the lighthouse. And,
oh, yeah. I mean,
and not
it
only
cool
see this,
us,
but hear it happen. You guys were all clicking and clanking, and it was a, not just visual, but audio experience.
Yeah, you can hear the winches grinding, and again, because there's no motors, you can hear people talking to each other on the boats and so on. And, you know, it was cool for us to have a crowd. We don't often have spectators at our start. I mean, most times we're out there and, you know, there's it's just not a lot of people around out there. But Grand Marais provides such a great vantage point for spectators from the pier. I mean, and we're starting, like you say, just outside the lighthouse there.
Well, and it's Fisherman's Picnic's in town this weekend, Bob, so you guys are in for a huge crowd. Looks like a chance of showers. You guys run this thing rain or shine.
Yep.
11 a.m. start, Central Time?
Yep, 11 Central Time for sure.
Beautiful. We're speaking with Bob Vanderplug. He's the fleet captain of the Thunder Bay Yacht Club, organizing the 2018 International Race between Grand Marais and Thunder Bay. Looks like a 77 nautical mile course. How long does that take the average boat, Bob?
Last year, I think, you know, if everything went perfectly, which almost never happens, but I mean, I'm projecting about 14, 15 hours for the first boat to finish. But it all depends on the wind. Last year, like I said, we sailed straight downwind with spinnakers for 12 hours. We were only about 15 miles from the finish line at about midnight. And then the wind shut off. It was like somebody turned the big fan off and we were just bobbing around out there. And, we finished just as dawn was breaking about 5.5 hours later.
And you're disqualified if you start the motor?
That's right. Yep. Some races, there are some races that have a cruising class, Dave, and they'll allow you to use the motor in light air conditions. You just have to keep track of how much time you use the motor. And, you know, a couple other details like that. And they have a formula for factoring that in to arrive at, you know, to sort of handicap the fact that you use the motor. But in this race, if you start the motor, then you're disqualified. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned those formulas and handicapping because I think folks need a brief explanation of corrected time and how a little yellow boat can end up winning the race once they get their handicap points.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that cool? Well, I mean, it's called PERF, Performance Handicap Racing Fleet. That's the acronym, and it's pretty simple. Each boat is assigned a number. For my boat, it's 69, and that's basically an expression of the speed potential in nautical miles per hour. And so, if you compare a boat rated 69 to a boat rated 100, then the boat that's rated 69 has the potential to go faster than the other boat in most conditions. And so the trade-off would be that the slower boat gets the benefit of 31 seconds for every nautical mile on the race course. So for me to beat that boat over a 10-mile race course, I'd have to be ahead of him by 310 seconds, 31 seconds times 10 nautical miles.
Sure.
So 310 seconds at the finish line, then we would be tied, actually.
Sure.
So how it's done, I'm not really sure. I mean, it's based on, you know, engineering formula and stuff like that, but it works.
That's part of the charm. Part of the magic of yacht racing. And Lake Superior, challenging body of water. What are conditions like out there on a 20-hour race? What do you plan for?
Well, we expect to encounter just about everything. So, we were racing in toques up here last night.
I was going to say, bring the snowmobile suits.
it was cold out there. I'm hoping for better weather, frankly. But especially once you get into darkness, it does get cold. And I think that's the biggest challenge. The weather, the boats are all, they're all good sailboats. I mean, the old expression is that the boat is usually tougher than the crew. And I found that to be true most of the time. So even when the crew are feeling pretty challenged, the boat will handle rough weather a lot better than the people it's carrying sometimes. But we expect pretty much any kind of conditions as far as wind and wave goes. The toughest challenge really is just staying warm through the night watches. You could be on deck for 4 hours at a time and it's cold. Yeah,
that's right. Fiberglass feels no wind chill.
No.
But hands, sir, I've got the cold hands, and it's difficult to work shackles and small
tie
pieces
knots
of equipment.
And things like that. Yeah.
Well, the International, starting tomorrow, 11 a.m., downtown Grand Marais, part of the festivities during Fisherman's Picnic. We're speaking with Bob van der Ploeg, the fleet captain of the Thunder Bay Yacht Club. He'll be racing on bobsled, one of my favorites. And I love the names of these racing boats, Bob. So you could just throw us down some of these.
Sure. I mean, we've got a great fleet this year. It truly is an international fleet. I mean, there are 12 boats racing, which we're really happy about. It's a little bit of an increase from last year. So there's 7 boats from Canada, from Thunder Bay, and then there's 5 boats from your side of the border, a couple from down in Bayfield, Wisconsin, and a couple from over Houghton, Michigan. The names are in some ways an expression of the skipper's personality sometimes, and sometimes they're just a name that sounds right, you know. So we got a boat called Mongoose, we got Flying Circus, we've got Straight Jacket. They like to joke that when they're racing, they're on a day pass. And it's good. And I'm trying to think now. Velocity Girl's coming. That's a sailor out of Bayfield. Galatea, not a boat that I'm familiar with, but I'm looking forward to meeting the skipper and crew of that boat. Kestrel, which is a bird of prey in our part of the world. So a lot of boats are actually named after birds. We've got Northern Harrier. We've got Kestrel. Sometimes boats are named after winds. Winds in different parts of the world have different names, like Scirocco, and I'm trying to think of another one.
Willowa.
Willowa. That's a great one. Yeah. What? Yeah. So, and you encounter boats that are named after whatever the local name for the prevailing wind is.
Sure. Well, and let's not forget Rumblefish. Another great
Rumblefish. Yeah.
Oh, love it, Bob. Well, we could talk for hours. We'll save that for the pier. You guys are piling up on the bulkhead on the east wall there over by the Coast Guard. So there'll be quite a scene, quite a party atmosphere there tonight, Friday night, and tomorrow morning. Looks like skipper's meeting at 10 a.m. So you guys better not go too late with the festivities.
No. We'll keep it moderate, of course, because we got a long ways to go. I mean, the real party's at the end of the race course, of course.
Yeah.
But we'll be enjoying ourselves and enjoying the atmosphere down in Grand Marais. It's such a great town to visit. It's great atmosphere there. Great local food. Great local beer.
It's the picnic.
A really cool place.
Fisherman's Picnic. Yeah. Is going to definitely keep you up at night. The bands and the festivities are happening. Thanks so much for bringing down the international race. Final question now, Bob, off maybe a little topic, but the Thunder Bay Waterfront District seems to be on a roll, seeing a lot of positive press on that revitalization. And I see Northern Harrier in a lot of those pictures. How's the Thunder Bay Yacht Club playing into that scene downtown?
Well, I mean, we've always, our club has been consulted by the city, and we've advocated for things that we think were important. I mean, our club mission is to promote boating on Lake Superior. So from that point of, that's our particular sort of focus when it comes to waterfront development activities. Obviously, you know, the city council in planning for the future has to consider other needs and other users as well. But I would say you're right. I mean, our waterfront has really come a long way in the past 5 years or so. And there's still a little bit of work to done. We got a hotel that's scheduled to open later this year, and I think that'll be the last big piece right on the waterfront. But you know what, Dave? We're getting our local art gallery, the Thunder Bay Art Gallery, is going to be moving down here too. They're in the process of planning and acquiring funds to make that happen. They're planning a brand new build down here. So yeah, it's been great, and our club is just happy to advocate for the needs of boaters and promote people actually getting on the water as opposed to just looking at it from the shore. You know, because when you get, as you know, you're a boat owner too. When you get out on your boat and you look back at your city or your community, it's like you stepped through the mirror. You get to look back and you get a view that is only available once you're off the land and on the water.
It's pretty special. You're right. Thanks so much for sharing that with all your work with the Thunder Bay Yacht Club. Bob Vanderploeg, good luck in the big international.
All right. Thanks very much, Dave.
Thank you.